You got to choose one for next season. You can't keep both. Both pending free agents. Who you keeping on the 2022 Blue Jays? Robbie Ray or Marcus Semien? Name and location, please, and the why. We'll read your text in about 20 minutes. But first, Casey Stern from MLB Network Radio. Casey, thanks for this. How are you?
I am doing well, and you can put in my vote for Semien.
Okay, well, I was about to ask you, and why Marcus Semien?
Well, a number of reasons. One, I'll start with the fact of track record. Yeah, Semien is a player who, after working with Ron Washington a ton in Oakland, became a better defender at shortstop, offensively sort of defined himself. And his leadership skills in Oakland are not only one of the reasons why, in transferring them to Toronto, the Jays have done much better, but one of the reasons why the A's this season have not done nearly as well. Because he's one of a handful of guys that you could put at the upper tier in terms of the way he leads and sets a tone inside a room. Also, the track record on the back of the card is that last year in the short season was a blip, and that offensively now we've got three of the last 4 years that have been really good, even though this is at a higher level. And he's an everyday player. And he plays multiple positions because you have him at one he hasn't played much, and he is a shortstop, and I'm sure he could play third if you needed to him as well. Robbie Ray is a guy who has always had lights out stuff, but could never find the strike zone. Torrey Lovello, who I know well, I know is rooting for him, but from afar is probably trying to wonder whether or not he got LASIK or thicker glasses or I don't know what, because he couldn't throw strikes the last number of years consistently to get out, and he would get himself into trouble. He's also somebody who is most likely going to try out and now get that one payday out there in the market, and he may get overpaid and given too many years without that track record, where Semien is a guy who is much more, I think, the controllable guy to look at in terms of, if I pay X, am I going to get Y out of him? And I think you will. And I think replacing Semien with somebody else in the market, who are you going to get? Where are you going? You're going to go move Bichette and let him play second base. You're going to go get what? Javi Baez? You're not going to get Correa. Corey Seager is going to end up staying in the Dodgers. Crawford already is with the Giants, which means they don't have to get anybody else. And they have a shortstop. Lindor already signed with New York. So, I don't know where you're going to go get that guy. Whereas if you don't go and overpay for Robbie Ray, you can try on a short-term deal to go get a Max Scherzer. You can use your younger players to go trade for a pitcher and maybe call Cleveland about a Bieber who's now only a year or two away from free agency. I think there are more things to do to replace Ray. The track record is better with Semien, and as an everyday player who's a leader, there's more impact on Marcus's side.
How rare is it that a player gives you that much power out of the second base position?
I mean, obviously it's extremely rare. One of the things, and not necessarily a great tribute video career for the Jeff Kent as a Toronto Blue Jay, but if you look at Jeff Kent in his career, it's a little bit ridiculous that he doesn't get, and we all know why. I mean, he's not very well liked. It's a stupid reason not to vote for somebody for the Hall of Fame. His numbers are top three in like every offensive category at second base ever, and he's got an MVP, and he still isn't really respected, but I bring him up because it was really rare to see what he was doing at the second base position in terms of that kind of offense. Robinson Cano, right? A guy who was doing that for a while, and then, oh, wait, he wasn't doing it legitimately, which we found out twice. Altuve, in kind of a weird way, I think because of his size maybe more than anything, but not necessarily to the power side of where Semien is. So it's extremely rare. There are one-offs where we've seen it. I mean, we've seen guys who have flash power at second base. I mean, look, Jonathan Scope, who's played a lot at second base, had a really good year as well. But it is really rare. And the rarest part of it is that he has become a much better defender at the toughest position in the infield and then moved over to a position he rarely ever played and become very good over there as well. And it's because of the work that this dude puts in before anyone sees him on the field on a daily basis, taking grounders, working on footwork. I mean, his work ethic, and this is from teammates of his, is top-notch, set the tone the way you want young kids to see. And I think it has probably rubbed off on everybody in that room.
Casey, you mentioned it here, and I want to talk more about the Blue Jays, but real quick, How frustrating is it that apparently the baseball writers and people who vote for the Hall of Fame are the beacon of morality and the best people, the cleanest livers of all of us, and they can judge people on their political ideology or if they were a nice guy or not and just determine their vote based on that? Because I think it's just over the top. If the guy was an incredible baseball player, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Ty Cobb killed somebody, and he's in the Hall of Fame. I know that was before, but I'm tired of the holier-than-thou attitude from the Baseball Hall of Fame writers. That's not really a statement.
No, I mean, you know, and I'm okay. I'm here for it, as the cool kids, I think, would say. I've got kids. Now I just do dad jokes. I would say that that's accurate. I also would say it's not just the baseball writers. We all – the league is guilty of that. I mean, look – you know, not for nothing, but, you know, A-Rod is on national broadcast and out there being pushed out in the world. And he's a guy who, you know, lied to all of us as much, if not more than literally anyone who's ever played about using PEDs, right? So it's like we all kind of choose to see what we want or remember what we want. But it is ridiculous. And, you know, look, I mean, you know, the Curt Schilling or whatever kind of, you know, I remember go back, look how long Jim Rice was there, whether you believe he's a Hall of Famer or not. The question shouldn't be whether or not you like the guy. I mean, there were people who didn't like, I remember going in the Wayback Machine, Eddie Murray. There's all kinds of folks who rub people the wrong way. It's about playing. And I will tell you this, and this is a good thing. You can feel free to use this. The character clause is brought up, like, people like know that term. No one knows what it is. The next time somebody brings it up, ask them if they can recite it to you. No one knows even what it is. It's like just like it's like an urban legend that like doesn't exist. And it is somewhere like in some hidden vault where like the potions for witches are, and people bring it up all the time. No one even knows what the hell it is.
Yeah, that's a great point. Casey Stern from MLB Network Radio joining us here on Sportsnet today. George Russick, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Out of the Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Yankees, give me your rankings out of those three teams to best to maybe the weakest.
Well, right now I think it's clearly Toronto, then – well, yeah, I don't know if it's clear New York, then Boston. I would say Toronto, New York, then Boston. And – I would say if you gave me what should it be, it probably should be New York, Toronto, Boston, if I'm being fair, because the names that are on the Yankees and the way they showed that they could play at a high level. I mean, think about this. It is crazy with the teams they had. And I'm in my mid-40s, but in my lifetime, the best team in baseball and maybe any sport I've ever seen. And I'm not a Yankee fan, or the 98 Yankees. I mean, specifically that team was, I think, the best team we've seen in this sport since going back a long, long time. And they never won 13 games in a row. This team just did it a few weeks ago and then lost 9-10. So I can't figure them out because their lineup has enough big names where you shouldn't have trouble scoring runs. They just can't make any contact. But it's clearly Toronto, New York, then Boston. The thing that I would throw in there just quickly about the Red Sox that has become – a big story that people, you know, don't really kind of want to talk about, and I touched on about it with Alex Cora just a couple of days ago, is I don't care if what people think about vaccinations or don't or politically, you know, when somebody says to you, hey, like to keep this job, like you can't smoke pot, okay, then you have a decision to make, right? Like it's not about like what you feel like your morals are. It's like, okay, do I want this job? Whatever. Well, they clearly have not thought much about masks and vaccinations in that room because every main player is getting hit with COVID and getting knocked out. I mean, they just got Chris Sale back, who hasn't been healthy seemingly in like forever, and pitching well. You know, if you're in the wild card game, that's the dude you want. So you're trying to get him every 5 days, right? Ramped up. And then all of a sudden, he's going to miss 10 days to 2 weeks. They have gotten totally screwed by them having to put in guys and young kids in spots they don't want them. They lost their closer. They lost Bogarts. Everybody has had COVID issues. So I think it's going to end up being Toronto and New York. And I think one of the big reasons it won't be Toronto-Boston instead is because of the amount of lost time they've had the last month and a half of the season because of what's happened with COVID.
Casey, is it getting enough attention on your network that the Blue Jays are playing their third home games at a different location this season and how incredibly hard that must be for those guys?
Yes. And I'll say this. I mean, I got I got a lot of crap for, you know, look, Jays fans are extremely good, great and passionate. And I had the luxury of, you know, with Turner being there for those postseason runs and in that building. And it's amazing. It's an amazing
country, Casey. That's the problem.
I mean, it's amazing. And I don't mean this, but you know, something sort of bad is coming, but there is, like, you know, a little bit of, like, insecurity that comes with anything you say related to that, because I will tell you, I didn't think that they were going to be able to do well in free agency unless it was a long, long-term deal. On a shorter deal, even like a Semien deal, I didn't think they had a chance. Why? Because I wouldn't know where I was playing. Like, if I'm signing a six-year deal like Springer, okay, so the first year may be weird, and then I know I'm in a great city and et cetera, right? Like, if you're signing a one-year deal, like, where am I? I'm playing in Florida. Am I in Buffalo? Like, so I absolutely think it's a huge deal. I also think this is not a coincidence that they have started to go on this run of, like, hey, we're comfortable and let's let it fly, once they actually can go home and be in a place where they're comfortable and have look, Buffalo did a great – let's be fair. In Buffalo, they did the best job they could do. They did way better than I thought. Not the Jays, but also, you know what I mean, like what they did with the building, all of that, way better than you ever could expect. But it's not being home, and it's not being in Toronto. This is not a surprise that they have started ramping up their play once they actually felt comfortable. To me, I think it's a very, very big deal. And I think it's one of the reasons why the MVP candidates on that club, the high standouts like the Cy Young candidate and Robbie Ray, et cetera, those guys should all be praised for doing that with all the change as it went.
Casey, I have to ask you this question. I think you know where I'm going with it. If you can build
Ohtani?
This is what I'm going to do. If you can build your baseball for Casey Stern, congratulations, you own a baseball team. You have your pick of any player in Major League Baseball to start your franchise with today. Who is it?
Oh, my gosh.
He's a 22-year-old. He plays first base in Toronto.
Yeah, I can't go. I know you're going to look. I actually, and I was on Vlad for Triple Crown and MVP months ago. I've been watching what he's done, and it's amazing. And he may not win MVP, but the only reason will be is that there's a cyborg unicorn that's going to have the one season, and he'll never be able to do this again. Ohtani won't have these kind of pitching numbers, won't pitch as many innings. We all know that. I mean, there's a human element outside of LeBron where it's going to factor in. So people, I think, are going to take advantage of their chance to acknowledge that. And I don't want anybody to be mad, but I think it's going to put Vlad second and Semien third, and that's the way it's going to probably pan out. But I'm not going to pick Ohtani or Vlad in this case. I would have to go for the three guys that come to mind is, look, you got a kid in Tatis who is, from the age standpoint, right where you are with Vladdy, but he's a guy, and Vlad's done a good job defensively, way better than I thought he would. But we're talking about Tatis, a guy who is just a massive level athlete in the middle of your infield. And I don't know what the limit is of his abilities because of just how ridiculous it is athletically what he can do. You almost feel like there's a power output that we haven't even reached. You've got like 50-50 potential someday, and I don't even think he knows what he's doing. That's how raw he is. I've got Acuna, who here where I live in Atlanta, who, again, same thing with the age and the athleticism, and I think the ceiling a little bit higher because of the ways they can impact the game. And then there's Mike Trout, who, by the way, is not that old and also is still the best player in the sport. So, you know, I won't give you a definitive answer because I would have to really look into it, but I would tell you those three guys for me would all come before Vlad.
Would it be out of the realm of possibility that Vlad Jr. is the best hitter in baseball in 2 years? If not, he's the best hitter in baseball this year, but in 2 years, he's unquestionably the best hitter in baseball.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but I'm going to give you a name I didn't even just mention. If you ask me right now who the best hitter in baseball is, I would tell you it's Juan Soto.
Okay. All right. You watch a lot more National League games than I do. And
I'm not a stats guy, so please, I interrupt myself. I need to tell you, like, it's not just about his on base percentage is literally nearly 50% because of his knowledge of he has the best knowledge of the strike zone since Barry Bonds played in the sport.
Yeah, and Vlad's OPS is north of 400 too.
Look, I think if Vlad was in the National League, he'd be my MVP pick over Tatis this year.
Okay.
He would be, but Ohtani's going to be difficult to beat.
How difficult is it going to be for the Blue Jays to kind of maneuver their rotation here down the stretch to not only win all these games, and they kick off a three-game series against the Twins, they have seven games against Minnesota, three more against Baltimore, but you want Robbie Ray on the mound for that wild card game, no? And it's going to be interesting how the Blue Jays manage their rotation down the stretch here, isn't it?
It is. Matchups also play a factor because, like, look, if you had, like, Berríos on the right side, let's say, is that a better matchup against, you know, the Yankees with some of those righty bats? So, all that stuff plays in. Remember, I mean, look, you're in Toronto. I mean, I remember going in the way back, not too way back, but, you know, Francisco Liriano and the choice of that. And then, you know, thank you, Buck Showalter, with bringing in Ubaldo Jimenez, and that was all she wrote. I mean, it's not always about, like, having the right matchup as much as people think it is, but I do think it will be difficult. I will say this. I watched Mad Bum on Game 7 in Kansas City on the road, and it didn't seem to matter that he wasn't playing in San Francisco, and that's the best performance I've witnessed in person in a postseason by a pitcher. Being at home is not necessary. However, because of all the things you brought up, because of what home means to this team versus others, with all of those factors involved, I think if they're at home in that environment, it's going to make a very large difference. So I think you're not just paying attention to solidifying the spot, but I think you're paying attention to, which makes it harder, right, to line up a guy. I think you're paying attention to bringing it home. And I also think it'll mean a lot for the fans and for that city to be able to culminate a year and a half of having this team all over the place with them having that Game 7 open the postseason kind of a feel at home. So I do think it'll be difficult with the importance not only on clinching, but also I think on clinching that game and bringing it to Toronto.
Where is the Blue Jays when it comes to home field advantage in all of Major League Baseball? They got to be near the top of the list, if not number one, Casey.
Yeah, I think home field advantage in baseball, it to me, it has never meant as much as it does in hockey.
Sure.
As an example. I mean, look, I'm an Islander fan, and, you know, I grew up in the Coliseum, and the building is a piece of garbage. And, yeah, I mean, it was the best acoustics for a concert, let alone a game. And we all know what the crowd did there, right? So I think but it's also, you're on top of people. It's different. Like, the old Yankee Stadium used to be that way. I think Toronto's got one of the better home field advantages. There are teams with great home record. Look, Houston is fantastic at home. I personally believe, if you ask me, the best environment in the game is San Francisco. It's not only because the park is gorgeous, but it's like a concert atmosphere, and those fans are always there, and they're always loud. This is not, you know, get there in the third, leave in the seventh, Dodger kind of a thing. And I think it's one of the reasons the Giants have always, in the playoffs, performed extremely well. So I think it's up near the top. I'd put it ahead of the new Yankee Stadium for sure. Would I put it ahead of Fenway? No, I wouldn't.